Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 93. And Dave, a flurry of activity here over the last 48 hours for the Steelers, as I don't know that it's fully assuaged people in terms of what their hopes were for free agency, but we knew as every year, what we do see is some depth signings. They typically take place kind of after the first week of free agency, and the Steelers kind of followed that script here this week. And since we spoke last, I've added three guys: Nile Davis, Cody Sensabaugh, and Tyson Alualu. Going to be certainly one of our favorite names to say over the last 48 hours. And you know, to me, we'll get your thoughts, but to me, Alualu is a really good signing. I'm sorry to see Ricardo Matthews unlikely to be back, but that to me probably will be the biggest, most significant signing during the free agency period.
You know, the best part of what we do, David, is you wake up every morning and you never know which way the day is going to go when it comes to not only covering the Steelers, but you know, the rest of the NFL, and then of course in your case all sports,
and the sports world. Yeah.
You know, you never know. You can plan one thing and all of a sudden you're running a totally different direction. When I ended the show with Alex the other day on Monday, I said, well, it looks like we got a quiet day ahead of us. And lo and behold, they brought in Nile Davis and Cody Sensabaugh and signed them that afternoon. It was reported earlier that morning that Tyson Alualu was coming in for a visit. And lo and behold, if they didn't sign him on Tuesday. So a busy couple of days for the Steelers. And I don't know which guy you want to start off with. I guess we'll start off with the two lower-level guys. Nile Davis and Cody Sensabaugh. And, you know, Nile Davis, I think the most exciting thing about Nile Davis is the fact that he's an accomplished kick returner and expects, according to his talk with the media after signing his contract, expects to, you know, to be in competition for that job. And how many times have we talked about over the last several years about, boy, it certainly would be nice if the Steelers could get their kickoff return game going. And Nile Davis also, you know, is a accomplished, experienced running back in the NFL, originally drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs. I think he's had two 100 yard games so far during his career. Nothing wrong with that signing, especially when you consider he was not given a signing bonus and he was given the minimum salary, you know, for his accrued years, and he'll have a discounted cap rate because of it being a minimum signing benefit contract that qualifying, you know, in the rules of the CBA.
Yeah, look, I think you look at the roster and look how things set up, and what this does now. Look, all these signings, there are only a certain number of roster spots. This most likely spells the end of D'Angelo Williams' time with the Steelers. Obviously, his contract, his 2-year deal, was up. He turned out to be a great signing. The injury the second half of last year was disappointing, I'm sure, for him. But Le'Veon Bell was carrying the ball, you know, 25, 30 times a game toward the end of the season, and he was going to get the rock. And there really wasn't a lot of room for D'Angelo Williams. But between Bell's injuries and suspensions, Williams did everything, you know, the Steelers could have asked for him, of him. And he will go down probably, certainly, as one of Kevin Colbert's top 10 free agent signings, maybe top 3 or 4. You know, he wasn't a full-time starter, so it's hard to put him in the category of James Ferrier or some of the other guys, but certainly a high guy on the list. Davis is going to compete with Fitz Toussaint for a roster spot. It's unlikely the Steelers carry 4 running backs, and it's I can't even envision a scenario where they don't draft a running back with one of those the first four picks they take in the draft. So that guy's going to make the team. So then, you know, who is your third running back special teams guy? And it was interesting to hear Mike talk about Fitz in the playoff game when he dressed and DeMarcus Ayers didn't. Now, Mike didn't say it was because Ayers was injured. He didn't even bring that up. He said because, you know, Fitz was healthy, so he's going to dress. And, you know, I wouldn't put him in the category of beloved like Darius Heyward-Bey or William Gay or whatever. But, you know, obviously the team, the staff likes him, but they don't like him enough to carry him as a fourth running back. So, Dave, my view is, as it is with these veteran free agents, you know, I don't want to say they're guaranteed a roster spot, but I think they have to really disappoint to not have a roster spot. And I feel that way about Justin Hunter. I feel that way about Nyle Davis. I mean, we know Sensabaugh and Alualu are going to be on the team. That's the end of story. It's not quite inked yet, I think, for Justin Hunter and Nyle Davis. But I would say, you know, if you asked me today and told me only one of the running backs was going to be on the team, Fitz Toussaint or Nyle Davis, I would say it'll be Nyle Davis.
Yeah, this is a Nyle Davis, too. Let's not forget that, you know, quickly kind of fell out of favor there in Kansas City, was traded. What was he? He was traded to the
conditional seventh.
Yeah, to the Green Bay Packers. Right. Ultimately waived from the Packers. He was claimed by the wasn't he the one that was claimed by the Jets and didn't even 24, you know, less than 24 hours later was waived and then returned back to the Kansas City Chiefs there. So, you know, the good thing is you don't have anything invested in him. He will compete for a spot in training camp, and you know, one has to like his chances, but in no way, you know, as you kind of alluded to, is he guaranteed a roster spot. And look, you know, the Steelers can go into the draft. If there's a running back there that they like, they can definitely select them in the first, you know, I would expect it to happen first three or four rounds. And yep. and if they don't, let's suppose a guy like D'Angelo Williams is still on the market immediately after the draft. You could probably re-sign D'Angelo Williams to a very cheap deal at that point, and then you know you at least you've got some, you know, some more experience there, and a guy that at least has done it with your team.
Yeah, you did, Dave, on the drafting a running back. That's one of those. I would bet a lot of your money that the Steelers draft a running back in the first with those one of those first four picks. So I look, you know, they franchised Le'Veon Bell. The expectation is a long term deal will get done, but they're going to have, you know, this is a good opportunity for them to get somebody else in the backfield that they can look. If Le'Veon Bell gets hurt, you really don't want Fitz or Nyle Davis to be your everyday back, and so. They could be. They can play a couple of games. I mean, Nyle Davis can play a couple of games for you, but you don't want him to be, you know, playing 12 games for you if, you know, God forbid, Le'Veon Bell tears his knee up or something like that. So, yeah, I do definitely expect them to go that way in the draft. And so, but you're right. If for some reason they didn't and they couldn't find the guy, that would be the scenario where D'Angelo Williams gets a phone call and you say, you know, you still have another year left. The second guy, Cody Sensabaugh, was not a guy really on my radar. I don't know how much he was on your radar, Dave. Again, we talk about guys who have bounced around a little bit. He's bounced around. This is the second week of free agency. I don't know how many visits he took before he came to see the Steelers. He is a depth signing who, you know, when you look at the depth chart now at corner, I think you probably put him behind you know, your two starting corners. And then you've got the wild card that is Cenqez Golson. And then, you know, Dave and I both think that they'll draft a corner probably again in those first three picks, or certainly the first three rounds, if not, you know, one, if not even two. And then so you have that. And then, you know, on the back end of the depth chart now, you've got Will Gay and Al Shabazz. So that's kind of your list, and if everybody stays healthy, it's going to be really you know, Shabazz would be ticketed for the practice squad again, and you know, might be tough for Gay to make the roster as a corner if because you know, Sensabaugh's your guy now. He's, I don't know that he's going to be your nickel corner, but he is going to be, I think, your third corner in terms of playing on the outside and go from there.
Well, I wouldn't go ahead and hand that starting corner job to Sensabaugh right off the bat here. You know, I didn't.
Yeah, I said I don't know he'll be the nickel guy. I said he'll be the third outside guy.
Well, here's the thing. He is best suited to play in the nickel, if you ask me. He can play outside. I'm not, you know, of the guys that the Steelers, of the three guys that the Steelers just signed, he is the one that I've looked at his tape at the least. Now, Alex did a very nice breakdown of him on Steelers Depot that I encourage everybody to read that went up, I believe, yesterday or day before. And, you know, this is here's why he probably flew underneath the radar. He obviously played into the season last year with the Giants. This is the same Cody Sensabaugh that roughly a year ago signed a 3-year contract with the Rams and looked like he was destined to be a big cog in their defense. Well, a couple games into the season he was benched, and then not long after that, they just cut ties with him after signing. I forget what the deal was, something like $14 or $15 million.
$3 and $14 or $15 million, right? Exactly.
Right. So it wasn't chump change, you know. So I don't suspect. After listening to him talk, I don't view him as a guy that probably was a cancer. They just was ready to move on with him, and he obviously went on to the Jets. Or to the Giants, and not a lot of tape on him, really, to be quite honest with you. So really, you have to go back to his tape during his time with the Tennessee Titans, and he had some decent time there. Of course, last couple of years there, he was with Ray Horton, he was with Dick LeBeau, so he's very, very acclimated, I think, with what the Steelers try to do defensively. He played a lot of slot in there, had some decent tape in there as well too. So, you know, for what you got him for, fairly cheap deal, he can play special teams for you. And obviously, if he isn't one of those top three corners, and even if he winds up being one of those top three corners, he might be asked to play on special teams. He can give you some of that as well too. So, a little bit under the radar, and I think a lot of that has to do with him just kind of quickly falling out of grace with the Rams, and then with the Giants just overall not playing much.
You know, Dave, it feels like in the NFL there is this game of musical chairs with corners, and whether they're the Antoine Blakes, or as he is known now, what's his Valentino?
Valentino.
Valentino Blake, the Bryce McCains, the Brandon Boykins, the Cody Sensabaughs. I mean, these guys where they've played a bit in the league. You hope to find a guy who, for whatever reason, fits your scheme better than maybe he's fit another scheme in the past and can do what you ask him to do. Guys in their mid to late 20s. Who are, they're kind of hanging on in the back end of their career. They're not going to be everyday, ideally for your team. They're not going to be everyday starters, but they are depth guys, and that's what Sensabaugh is. He's a depth guy. If the Steelers, if Justin Gilbert was part of the equation right now, I don't know that Cody Sensabaugh would have been signed. So he kind of fills that with another body in camp. And as I mentioned, Al Shabazz, I don't know if Al Shabazz is ever going to amount to anything. Steelers have seen him. They like him enough to have him around, but he may end up being one of those guys as well. Remember, he actually had to go through waivers to go back to the practice squad, get picked up by the Texans for a couple games last year, and then they waived him, and the Steelers picked him back up, and he ended up dressing for some of the games at the end of the year. So, that's not the sexy signing. If the Steelers had their way and things went exactly how the Steelers planned, you'd probably see him on the field for 5% of the defensive snaps over the course of the season. I think you're right about special teams. He can be a contributor on special teams. You can maybe take Ross Cockrell off special teams if Sensabaugh can do that job and go from there. So, we'll see. But I will tell you, I'll tell you what this means in my mind in terms of the bigger picture that I think is significant is I've heard people, not you, Dave, but I've heard people say, the Steelers should draft a nickel corner. Trust me, the Steelers are going to be looking for a guy who can play outside in a bigger corner. I'll be surprised if the corner that the Steelers take in this draft is under 6 feet. They're not going to be looking for a guy to play inside. As you say, Sensabaugh is probably better suited to do that Will Gay is certainly suited to do that, and Sanquez Golson is ticketed to do that, although he can play outside. He can definitely play outside, but I think if the Steelers, if everything went the way the Steelers would like, you know, they could move Golson inside. So the corner guy, you know, I think they're going to be looking for a guy in the Artie Burns mold when they draft their corner.
Well, I don't think, you know, depending on, of course, who they get and where they take them, I don't think if what I'm trying to say is if a guy is there that is a great projected slot player that might not have the, you know, 6'6".
What do you think of Buda Baker?
I view him more as a safety, you know, more of a slot, you know, one of those nickel backers more than anything.
Yeah. So would you think that they would take a guy like that?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about looking for someone that could come in and play kind of a nickel backer role, he could be in the discussion. Yes. You know,
he definitely could. I just would be surprised if they go that direction.
But he's not a true, you know, Buda Baker's not a guy you're going to line up on the boundary, you know, outside. No. I don't think, you know. So
I agree.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't think you go in there with blinders on your draft board and say, we got to remove this guy because he only fits in the slot. He's got quick feet. He's got, you know, great click and close, good ball awareness, a willing tackler, but you know, he's 5'10", you know, I don't think would I like to see them get a bigger guy that can do some press stuff and possibly be the heir apparent to, Ross Cockrell and play opposite Artie Burns? Yes, but I'm not ready to discount. You know, the best of both worlds is you get a guy that can play boundary and inside. You know, in the draft there. But in all likelihood, yes, I would expect the cornerback right now at this point to probably be better suited to play outside. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if we're sitting. Because, I mean, look, let's face it. We just don't know anything about Sanquez Golson right now. And what we know about Cody Sensabaugh, in my opinion, is he's not a long-term fix.
Two-year contract, which is a coin flip whether he sees the roster next year.
Right. And then William Gay, if William Gay does make it this year, there's a good chance this is it for William Gay. So I think you've got to look hard and long. If you have any questions at all about Sanquez Golson and how can they not, you have to be open to taking a guy that can play in the nickel, especially in the first couple of rounds. I mean, I'll be shocked if after the first four picks, which we're talking about the first three rounds, that the Steelers don't take a cornerback of some kind.
Yeah, I'll just say it for the millionth and first time, first three picks, edge rusher, corner, running back in some order. The only thing I would say out of those three is running back won't be the first round pick, but it'll be one of those three. I'm betting Dave's house on it. Okay, let's get to the sexy pick, Tyson Alualu. And this is a guy who has pedigree. and you know, I've seen some people compare the background to Darius Hayward Bay. And I'm a little that doesn't really work for me. Whatever, he went seventh, I think, overall. Tyson Alualu went 10th. He's out of Cal. The reason I don't love it is because I think they've had different levels of productivity as pros. Alualu's going to be 30 years old in May. And he's been with the team that drafted him, you know, obviously since he was taken in 2010. And he's been a good player. I would say, you know, just in terms of a productive comparison, I mean, I think he's been maybe a little bit better than Ziggy Hood was during his time with the Steelers. He's been a little bit more productive than that. And he wasn't a first-round bust. He wasn't what you would hope to get out of your first-round pick when you're picking 10th. You hope for better than that. But it wasn't a failed first-round pick. He's a guy who's never missed a game due to injury. Interestingly, at age 29, he didn't dress the first two games this past season just because he didn't dress. You know, they didn't feel like they didn't activate him for game day. And that Jaguars defense, you know, they brought in a bunch of guys over the past now 3 years. But, you know, he's a guy who has had some level of productivity, and what he brings to the table, Dave, that I think I know you've written about this, but I think it's been underreported, is his versatility on the defensive line. And I don't know that Alualu, and I don't know if we didn't talk about this. I don't know that he spells the end for Dan McCullers, but Dan McCullers, he's not a true nose, but he gives you another guy who can play the three technique. He can play on the nose. He's probably best suited on the outside, but it also means, and I hope Mike does this, it means Stephon Tuitt and Cam don't have to play 90% of the snaps. They can play 75%. And you can have somebody going in. I think Ricardo Matthews was a bit more of a wild card last year. I think Alualu is more of a proven guy, and he can plan on now kind of, you know, the starters play the first three series, and then Alualu plays one for each or something like that, each half, something like that. So I like the signing a lot.
I consider, and what I wrote even in my title of the post I did after he talked to the media, was he brings you versatility, he brings you durability, and he brings you the a strong desire, want to win. And how could he not after all that time he spent in Jacksonville there with the Jaguars? I think, and as you'll see probably in Alex Kozora's breakdown on the site this morning, He can line up all over. He can play the three, he can play the four, he can play the five. Not a ferocious pass rusher, but he has nice hand usage. His bull rush is probably the best move that he has. Not really sound when it comes to counters. I wouldn't expect to see him a lot over the nose in a base 3-4, but he can certainly probably give that to you should emergency, you know, present itself. I'm not sure how many snaps I want him out there as a true 5 tech in a 3-4 base overall, but I consider him an upgrade over Ricardo Matthews, so take that for whatever you want. He is a guy, however, that I wouldn't expect to play more than 10 to 15 snaps a game, you know, in some sort of rotation there. So, you know, obviously has pedigree as a former first round draft pick, fairly consistent production, at Jacksonville over his 7 years. He had 37 combined tackles last year. 26 before that, 30 before that, 42, 45, 40, 38. Not a sack master by any stretch of the imagination, but seems to have averaged, well, he's had 17 and a half over 7 years, so that's a little more than two sacks a season in his last 7 years. You know, sounds like a smart guy. I'll have to dig a little bit deeper into his film. I was a bit surprised, though, David. 2 years, $6 million, which he, you know, he's coming off of a contract in Jacksonville that paid him $6 million over 2 years. I expected that signing to be a little less total value. I mean, let's face it, he's averages
$4 million bucks, right? Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, he makes more than James Harrison a year right now. So I was a bit surprised about the total amount. But hey, you know, if you want some quality, you got to pay. You got to come off the pocketbook a little bit for it as well. So not a lot not to like about the signing, but on top of it, I wouldn't schedule the parade.
Hey, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a lifelong Steeler fan, a Pittsburgh native. He's a nationally recognized lender. Would love the opportunity to help out our listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig Oxane at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right, so the reality is the Steelers are here. And Dave, why don't you get a better handle on this than I do. Why don't you lay out where the Steelers are cap-wise now, and kind of what that means going forward with the view that Tuitt, potentially Ali Villanueva, and Le'Veon Bell all get extended.
Yeah, you know, heading into hold on just a minute here. I'll pull my cap numbers up. But as of, let me see here, as of the signings of Sensabaugh, Nile Davis, and who's the other one? Justin Hunter. Now, even though we have some overarching totals on Alualu, we don't know the complete breakdown of that yet. But after Davis, Sensabaugh, and Hunter, the Steelers, according to the NFLPA, have 19.176, almost 19.177 million in salary cap space. Now, I think the Alualu contract, based on the raw numbers, will probably eat up, roughly another $2 million or so of that. So let's say $17 million with all those guys under contract in salary cap space. It'll probably end up being a little bit more than $17 million. I think, and this is just a projection, I think if they sign Tuitt and Alejandro Villanueva to extensions, you know, moving forward into the offseason, I think that could potentially use up roughly $8 million in salary cap space, okay?
And in your mind, is that largely money devoted to Villanueva, or do you think is it more equally split?
No, I think it's Tuitt already has a pretty well over $1 million cap charge this year. I'm kind of betting that Tuitt will get a contract kind of similar to the one that Cameron Hayward.
Right. That's exactly the template. You look at that and say it's going to be the same contract.
Right. So let's say his cap hit, you know, ends up $6 million plus or so like that. In other words, an increase of like $5 million over what it is right now. So $5 million of that $8 million that I talked about would go to it. A rough estimate, you know, on some numbers that I've run with Villanueva, where not only he gets paid, but the Steelers get a bargain, would have Villanueva's cap charge increasing by roughly $3 million. Okay.
And it's currently $615 is what he's slated to make. So that'd be about a $2.5 million increase.
Right, right. So, you know.
Let me ask you, Dave. I threw out I got in this debate on Twitter with a guy who knows what he's talking about. So it wasn't contentious, but we had very different views of things. You know, for those who don't know, Villanueva, he's free agent?
Exclusive rights.
Exclusive rights, and then it'll be a restricted free agent next year. So the Steelers are going to have Villanueva for the next 2 years at a relatively cheap cost. So $615 this year, and then depending on how they exactly tender him, let's just say they give him the highest tender next year. Let's say it's $4 million. So that means over the next 2 years, you're paying him $4.5 million. So Dave, I thought something like a 4-year $22 million deal. So, you know, you're adding $18 million on paper dollars to the contract, and you give him kind of a signing bonus of like $6, $7 million. And maybe my signing bonus is off, but I thought that was kind of a deal that would be relatively attractive to both teams. And he thought I was massively low on my numbers.
Here's what I wrote about Villanueva on February 16th. Now, remember, this is just, you know, wild speculation. Would Villanueva entertain a 3-year, $15 million deal, and one that would likely put around $6 million in his pocket when he signs, and roughly $10.5 million after 2017-2018? You know, that, in case you're curious, that would give Villanueva $6 million in 2017, and if $5 million of that were paid to him as a signing bonus, his salary cap charge would be $2.7 million. So, you know, an increase of $2.1 million right around in there. Now, I projected $3 million at most being needed to sign him. Not only would that pay Villanueva, it would be a good deal, in my opinion, for both sides at an average yearly value of $5 million. And on top of that, it would potentially give Villanueva one last chance to cash in after 2017, after the 2019 season. So now that I've told you, what do you think? I mean, what were your numbers average per year?
Well, I had 4 and 22, which is, you know, pretty close. I mean, if you're adding a year you think it would probably add a little bit to the total value. So, I mean, we're generally on the same page.
Right. You're slightly over $5 million a season. Yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't argue with that. Look, I mean, he's scheduled to make, what is it, 600-something?
615.
615 this year. Then next year, even if you gave him a second-round tender, that's what's that going to be?
I gave him a first-round tender at $4 million, roughly $4
million. Okay, well, there you go. You know, and he has a chance to make, $6 million, according to my numbers, this year. So I think we're in the ballpark. I mean, I guess you could climb as high as $6 million a season with him. You're not going to pay him more than Gilbert, right?
You're not going to – look, this is a deal. First of all, you know, Allie's not made a lot of money. And I heard people say, oh, you know, he can leave football and make a ton of money. They were like, he can make a bunch of money not playing football. Listen, I went to business school. Just because you go to CMU doesn't mean you come out and get you're not getting $1 million a year job. They're not just handing those to people who walk out the door with a degree. Now, he's an exceptional guy. He's obviously an intelligent guy. He's a charismatic guy. He's a good looking guy. All those things. But to think that he's going to do anything in his life, and this is true for just about any football player who's successful in the NFL, to think they're going to do anything in their life that they will make more money than they will playing football is unlikely. I mean, there'll be the occasional guy who that happens for. But Ali Villanueva, if he has a good year this year and proves to be a good left tackle, Kelvin Beachum just got $8 million a year. When he got benched by Jacksonville, the Jets signed him. He's got $12 million guaranteed coming. You know, I pick any guy you want in the NFL. I can tell you they're not going to make $12 million over 2 years in anything they do at any point in time. I mean, it's just not happening. So if Villanueva stands to make serious money here, life-changing money, you know, he can sign his first contract, and then the second one's at 31, and that's not old for a left tackle. So, this is his vocation, folks, and this is a real opportunity for him.
And the Steelers have bargaining power over him now. You know, yes, Beachum got a nice deal, but let's remember he was a free agent. Ali Villanueva doesn't really have much rights right now. So if he can get a reasonable deal, now some will say, well, Villanueva can just threaten the Steelers and say, you know, if you don't give me more, I'm probably going to just walk away after this season. If you're only going to pay me $600,000. I think it's a good deal what we laid out for both sides. I mean, Marcus Gilbert, and look, I understand Marcus Gilbert signed his contract a few years ago, but he averages, what, $6 million a season. I don't think that you're going to pay Ali Villanueva. Who knows? Maybe you pay him $6 million, and both of them are making the same thing. But that would be the ceiling, I think, in my opinion, would be, let's say a three-year $18 million. Would you go that high with Villanueva?
Yeah, I'm not going to nitpick over $1 million, one way or the other. So I would like to add a year to the deal. I'd like it to be 4 years.
Okay, well, yeah, maybe that's part of the deal. Okay, we will pay you $6 million a season, and obviously up a little bit of the bonus and whatnot. And on the flip side, you have to give us 4 years instead of three. So, I guess in short, we're in the ballpark. And to be quite honest with you, I think I'm going to be surprised if that doesn't happen at some point during the offseason. Now, back to the salary cap situation, okay? Let's say right now they're sitting roughly $17.5 million even after the Alualu contract. Let's go ahead and plan for $8 million of cap space being committed to Tuitt and Ali Villanueva. Are you fine with that?
Yep.
Okay, so that puts us at 17.5 minus 8, $9.5 million in cap space.
Sounds right.
Okay, now you still have these future charges coming. You know, I lay this out in every post that I do of roughly, let's say, $8.5 million that you know, for future charges related to draft class, 52nd, 53rd man on the roster, practice squad, $1 million cap loan repayment, $3 to $4 million go towards reserves for in-season injuries. So let's say that's $8.5 million. And what number did we leave off at there? $9.5 million.
Yep.
So that leaves you $1 million in available realistic expendable cap space if everything transpires the way we think it will. However, comma.
Now, the big, and this is the big, for anybody who's, you know, now semi-panicked, there is a big caveat here.
Right. You know, the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell and all these cap numbers that I'm spouting off, folks, include Le'Veon Bell wearing the franchise tag, you know, over $12 million right now. Now, the question becomes... and I think there's probably not many people listening to this podcast that don't think a deal's going to get done with Le'Veon Bell between now and the deadline of July 15th, okay? Assuming all of you listening are on board with that, now becomes the hard part. What do you do as far as structure with Le'Veon Bell? In my opinion, and assuming the Steelers are pretty much done right now in free agency, and even if they're not, another player or two at minimum salaries is barely going to move the cap needle. If I'm the Steelers, David, I try to give Le'Veon Bell as much of his 2017 money as a base salary as opposed to signing bonus. Now, let's take some numbers that Joel Corey recently tossed around, and let's say Le'Veon Bell walks away in 2017. Now, this is not average yearly value. This is what he's probably going to or could walk away from the table with an extension. Let's say $17 million, okay? Well, you obviously are going to give him some of that in a base salary and the rest of it in you know, maybe $1 million or $2 million roster bonus this year, and then signing bonus. You might as well count roster bonus in 2017 and base salary as the same because he's going to get paid it. The signing bonus then becomes the big thing. In my opinion, depending on how much cap space you need, and remember, we've already accounted for $3 to $4 million in reserves for the Steelers going into the season, I would be tempted to try to keep his cap number in maybe the $8, $9, $10 million range, as opposed to what it is now, 12.1. And within that, make his, you know, try to only get away with paying him, let's say, a $10 to $12 million signing bonus. And I say that because this is a player with injury concerns or injury history, a player that plays a position that guys can lose their wheels quite quickly. And, you know, hey, let's not discount the fact he has been suspended a couple of times. So that's what I would do. And even after all this, you could still turn around and end up clearing $1 million to $3 million in salary cap space.
Right. Now, when you think of Le'Veon Bell, I know we kind of use the franchise tag as a starting point. I don't know that in this specific, somewhat unusual case that it is a starting point. But when you think of Le'Veon Bell, are you thinking 4 years, $40 million, or you know what? What kind of numbers, average annual value, are you thinking about with that?
David, I can't get off of my thinking. Maybe I think too much like an agent now. $12 million.
Yeah. So you think 4 years, $50 million?
Yeah, four. You know, maybe. Yeah, right at about 50, a little less, maybe. I don't know, but right around in there. Yeah. Anything less than that, I would consider a bargain, quite honestly, David. I mean,
the question is, does his injury history and his, the suspensions cost him a little bit of money?
Well, right now he's wearing that tag. I don't know if he signed that tag just yet, but I would.
Right. The thing about that is that tag, you know, the longer the deal, the higher the risk, right? So the Steelers are taking on risk with the length of the deal. So you say, okay, well, you know, we'll go year to year if you want to go year to year, but maybe that's not as good for him.
Well, Darryl Bakari, I forget how to pronounce that. Here's what I'm telling the Steelers. Okay, hey, if we have to wear it, we'll take out some insurance. We're going to make 12 point whatever million this year on the tag, and then you're going to have to pay us another 14 million, 14 to 15 million next year for tagging us again. So my client, is already, barring anything catastrophic happening, going to make $26-27 million over the next couple of seasons. What you got?
Right. Right.
That's how I'm approaching it. If I'm his agent, that's why I think there's a good chance and agree with Joel Corey that Le'Veon walks away with roughly $17 million or so this year. And maybe $28 million after the first two seasons. So, yes, I think the Steelers have some bargaining power with Bell's history, not only injury and suspension, but Bell has the tag on his side and an insurance policy as well.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That all makes it does. I would argue the other side if I were the Steelers, but absolutely it makes sense. And it's absolutely, a realistic scenario. Now, one of the things that's interesting is the running back market. Le'Veon Bell's holding up the running back market right now for the rest of the backs in the league in this rolling 5-year average for the franchise tag, because I think the second highest paid player in the league right now is scheduled, and it's not going to go higher. So this is scheduled to make $7 or $8 million with Peterson and Charles being released. Those were, I think, number 2 and 3 in the league in terms of payment. Now, David Johnson's going to get paid somewhere along the way here, and some other guys will eventually. But it's interesting at this particular moment in time, Le'Veon Bell's the only running back getting paid, big dollars.
And look, if they could get them under, an average yearly value of under 12, I wouldn't expect it to be any less than 10 and a half, right? I mean.
Yeah, I think that's 10 and a half. Yeah, that's a minimum.
And look, I don't know how these. I don't pretend to be an expert on how these injury policies work and how much he could get. But if I'm his agent and knowing that Le'Veon Bell is arguably the best all around running back in the game right now, regardless of his injury history and suspension history, I'm pushing for $12 million, and I'm pushing for it right up until the deadline, and it wouldn't surprise me if this deal if it takes until July 14th to get this done. And once again, maybe I think too much like an agent. As I said, he's got the tag on his side, and that tag can turn into 2 years and roughly, $27 million. On top of it, and what's 27 million divided by 2?
Yeah, 13 and a half. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of math you made me do today. People are gonna have to take off the shoes to keep up with this podcast. But overall, salary cap wise, they're fine. Right now, and it wouldn't overly surprise me to see maybe one or two more veteran minimum guys maybe sign, some roster body, camp fodder, if you will. But for the most part, I think we both agree it's time to put the trumpets away.
Would you sign Ricardo Matthews on a 1-year, $1 million deal?
No, I'd give him the minimum for his accrued years right now. I'd give him
Okay, you get the idea. Would you sign him for the vet minimum?
Yes, absolutely. In a heartbeat, tomorrow.
I would like to see them do that. Because, if you do that, look, how I felt. We're not on the same page on drafting a defensive lineman, and I think that need has obviously gone down significantly, certainly early in the draft. And if you sign Ricardo Matthews, and I thought LT Walton made some nice progress at the end of last year, you're set. I mean, you can decide whether you're keeping Dan McCullers or not. But with your two starters, three starters with Hargrave, depth of LT Walton, Ricardo Matthews, and Tyson Alualu, you're good to go, man. Fire me up. That's my 6D lineman. Shake hands with Dan McCullers and move on. So if that, again, it's a little bit like the stuff I talked about with Landry Jones. If you sign Ricardo Matthews, you don't you can bring in a defensive lineman as an undrafted free agent. You can kind of down the road, but you have what you need, and you don't have to draft a defensive lineman. Again, that just opens more spots to you know, throw edge rushers and corners and safeties at the issue.
And let's throw one more, however, comma onto the salary cap talk, and let's look at the roster real quick, David. You've been talking about the possibilities of a guy like William Gay, you know, maybe getting cut. Well, if you do that, you know, he's due a base salary of $2 million in 2017. Now, after roster displacement, you're really looking at, you know, a savings of, you know, probably around $1.4 million if you cut, if you wind up cutting Gay in lieu of a bottom end roster player. You also have a guy, Arthur Motes. You know, who knows if they draft a couple of edge rushers? We know they're going to draft one. What happens if they draft two that they end up wanting to keep? Arthur Motes is scheduled to make $2.25 million in 2017. So there's another, you know, potentially $1.5 million in cap savings there. You've also thrown out the name of Darius Hayward Bay over the course of the offseason. You know, he's scheduled to make $1.2 million. So there's another, let's say, $750,000 in potential salary cap savings should he not make the final roster as well, too. So just because in that exercise that we just did, we whittled it down to the Steelers having $1 million in effective salary cap space, yeah, that's a projected way out figure at this point. So nobody go running, jumping out the window right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well done. I think you're obviously all over that. So that's where they are. Josh McCown of the Jets. You know, you get an NFL, and as much of a fan as I am of Josh McCown, you get an NFL team whose three quarterbacks on the roster are Josh McCown, Bryce Petty, and Christian Hackenberg. Kind of step back and wonder how that happens. So they're going to have a, you know, look, they are a team in massive transition right now. They're going to go through what the 49ers have been going through, it looks like, over the next couple years. So when we think about the, you know, the Browns are obviously the punchline in the NFL and have been for the last, you know, however long. But you think about the teams that are going to be the worst teams picking at the top of the draft. This is even, you know, we're looking now, you know, 13 months out. If we were taking an early list, Dave, the Jets, the Browns are still going to be picking high. Maybe the Bears. I don't know who else do you look as the early NFL?
The early what? You cut out for a minute there.
The early dregs. I mean, who are going to be the bad teams next year? Is it the same teams that are? I mean, the Jets are the sixth pick this year. They're going to be. They might be the number one pick next year. Who else doesn't look good right now?
Yeah, you know, the Browns. I mean, how much the Browns won't go 1-15? I don't think. But
no, both their lines are going to be good. They get Myles Garrett and another, you know, somebody else with the 12th pick. They're going to be better. They're not going to win eight games, but they'll be better.
What about the Chargers? Where do you stand on the Chargers right now? I mean,
here's how little I heard this guy's name. I did not know Manti Te'o was a free agent. I didn't see his name once. Maybe I did. Maybe I just forgot. But you know, he signed yesterday with the Saints, and I was like, wow, nobody brought his name up at all.
I bet his girlfriend noticed.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't help myself there.
All right, here, I got one for you. Okay, so Mel Kiper came out with Mock 3.0 today. Have you had a chance to look at it yet?
Yes, sir, and I wrote about Bowser.
Okay, so this is a guy that I know you and I haven't mentioned on the podcast. I've not seen him mocked in the first round to anybody at any point in time at any number in the draft. He's a guy I can't tell you much about. I'm sure Dave can tell you more than I can. He has the Steelers at number 30, Mel Kiper, in the mock that went up this morning. Tyus Bowser, who's an outside linebacker from Houston. He's got a little history of he got in a fight with a teammate, which is maybe what he's most famous for. 6'3", basically 250. Basically, Kiper writes that, you know, he did well at the combine, 4.65 40, a 37.5-inch vertical jump. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that sometimes you run into the measurables versus on tape. His tape is okay, but to me, he doesn't jump off the tape like a first rounder compared to his nice combine numbers. Now, he jumped nice, 37 and a half inches, 10 foot, 7 inch broad jump, and I believe both those numbers were top three as far as the linebackers at this year's the linebacker class or groups that were at the combine this year. 48 games played in, 137 total tackles, 22 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, 2 interceptions, 8 pass breakups. 8.5 of those sacks came during the 2016 season. If memory serves me, he's played on his feet some. And it was asked to drop some at Houston. So he has that going for him. Remember Colbert talking about back at the combine about how tough it is sometimes with these edge guys, you know, that played defensive end mostly and weren't asked to drop into coverage or play on their feet much. He's got some of that on tape. Okay. So there is that. He's one of those second round guys, David, and I think you could probably lump him in there with a guy like Carl Lawson as well, and maybe a Takaris McKinley and as well, maybe even a Charles Harris. He's in that group, so I don't know. It'll be his pro day's coming up at the end of this month. It'll be one would think the Steelers will be there. You know, Joey Porter, maybe even Tomlin, maybe Colbert. Be interesting to see there's no reason to think that they wouldn't bring Bowser in for a pre-draft visit. So I guess in short, I think you've got to consider him as a possibility as the guy at 30, and depending on how far he drops, maybe into the second round.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you. Well, Hassan Reddick is the guy who flew up Kuiper's board, and he's basically, ever since the Senior Bowl, this is the guy who's been maybe the biggest mover in everybody's kind of, you know, view of where you stand. He has him going 11th to the New Orleans Saints, so that was interesting. Dave, of the group of edge rushers that are seen currently as the back of the first round type guys, and I mean the Tack McKinley from UCLA, Taco Charlton from Michigan, Hassan Reddick from Temple. I mean, if you want to throw Rivers from Youngstown State, throw him in there. The Harris from Missouri, Lawson from Auburn, who wasn't on Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 list, interestingly enough. I might be forgetting a guy or two. Let me just see. I had a list here a second ago.
While you look for that, Alex Kazori in his profile, in his don't tear anything up there.
I think I tossed it. So.
But Bowser in the report that Alex Kazori did several weeks ago, he has him projected as a mid day two kind of guy. So
back in the second round, early third round.
You know, so. You know, we'll see as it comes in. Now, he did miss, 5 or 6 games due to a fractured orbital bone last season due to that fight. And as we mentioned, he did have 8 sacks in 8 games. So, he's got that going for him. He played power forward for Houston's basketball team up until his sophomore season. So, he's a guy, that's got some athletic ability to him, and I think he showed that definitely during the combine. I just kind of, to me, the measurables versus some of the tape, doesn't really stack up, but, I don't hate the guy.
So of those guys I mentioned, and he has Tack McKinley going at 9 to Cincinnati, which is much higher than any other mock you'll see has. But I named about 6 guys. I don't think I left anybody out of the group. But, of Harris, Lawson, Charlton, McKinley, Reddick, Rivers, Bowser, is there a guy that stands out amongst that group of guys that, all of whom could be there at 30, a couple of them might be off the board, but is there one that's clearly head and shoulders in your mind better than the others?
Well, I think Reddick, let's remember that Reddick is a kid that I think you do a lot of things with. I think he plays inside, but you can line him up on the edge situationally, as a pass rusher, the way the Steelers do at times with Shazier and did at times with Timmons. In short, I view him more as an inside guy than I do a true every down edge rusher. So, if he's there, if Reddick's there, it'll be hard not to run up with a card with him, in my opinion. Okay. Now, let's say he's off the board. Rivers is one of those guys that You know, I'm trying to find a hard play. It's kind of hard for me to slot him. And I think a lot of that comes with my a little bit of the bias of the competition that he played against, right? So I don't hate him. I wouldn't punch a hole in the wall if he was the pick 30th overall. I just view him more as a second, maybe into the third round guy as I sit here today. Lawson is a guy that I've been stuck on, Dave, and I know we recently got an email from one of our readers and
Pastor Joe.
You know, I understand some of the concerns related to him against the run. Maybe some of his bend. Why didn't he put up a better three cone time than he did? He put up a nice short shuttle time. That's for damn sure. Nice lifting. You know, nice other measurables. You know, did he slip on the three cone? Not fantastic bend at Auburn, but a guy that. Look, if he had not gotten injured, it's a big if, you know, had he played a full complement of games at Auburn, I think we're talking about a slam dunk top 30 guy. Now, there's obviously, you know, he was able to play last year, and that cracked hip supposedly is okay, as is his knee. It's just a guy, because he played in the SEC, some of his burst, his hand usage during pass rush, to me, it'd be hard to pass him up at 30 overall. And look, I think he's a guy that can improve his play against the run. He'll have to at the NFL level, but I think he's a guy that comes in just as reportedly Mike Tomlin told Lawson at his pro day. Look, we just want you to rush the passer right now.
Right, right.
And that's why I'm kind of stuck on Lawson as, I don't know, would you call it leader in the clubhouse? I don't know, but
would you take it? Would you just if somebody said today, I won't tell you anything about the draft, but Harris is there at 30. Would you take him?
Man, I'd still take. I think of what I've watched of Harris and Lawson, I'd be more inclined to take Lawson.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. You know, we haven't talked about our buddy, Craig Oxane, and we should do that. Which, you know, we got some, trying to think if we got a good name to spell.
How about
Alulu? Alulu is always it is going to be one of our favorites. And I saw Kaboom say on Twitter, he said, you know, that'll be a name that Steeler fans won't be able to pronounce for the entire 2 years. That's a pretty easy one for me, right? Alulu?
I had to Google the pronunciation.
Do what's that song?
Skip to my Lulu. I know the one you're trying to think of. I just can't rattle it off the tip of my tongue.
Okay, tell me something because I'm pulling something up here and it's not my computer's freezing.
Tell you something. Well, David's got, let's see, at the end of this month on the 31st and then the following Monday, David's going to be chasing the round ball with the Pirates. So Alex Kozora will be filling in on that Friday and the following Monday podcast for David as he goes to look for chicks who dig the long ball.
Yeah, baseball will be my brother and my nephews, who are 16 and 13. We're going to head up to Fenway Park. We're going to go up for the weekend to Boston, do a little college visiting for the older one. And I've been to Fenway, having lived in Boston for a couple of years, and I've had the opportunity to be up there a bunch of times, and I've been to a bunch of games at Fenway, but I have never been, not surprisingly, I have never been to opening day in Fenway, and I'm not sure. I think the Pirates once have opened in an American League park since interleague plays began, but that should be some fun. Not this coming Monday, but two Mondays. We're 12 days till opening day of the baseball season.
And we're like 5 months away now from the NFL draft. I'm running out of things to kill time with here. We're starting to sound like a Mike Francesa.
Mike Francesa podcast.
Yeah.
We did. Okay. Now we're gonna get there.
The more I can do it if you can't.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. You read one. Knock one out.
The mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Alu-Alu. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even in, let's see, where the Steelers, where were they at yesterday? UCLA. I don't know what.
UNC. UNC. Carolina.
UNC. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call our buddy Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage License, Equal Housing Lender. I've gotten better since the last time you've read that, even though
you might be the leader in the clubhouse for doing that going forward.
Oh, hell no.
That was excellent.
I wouldn't put our listeners through that. That's why you do it on a regular basis, because of my damn stuttering problem. But in all seriousness, thanks to Craig Oxane, we hope several of you, you know, if you get in, you know, if you have a need for a mortgage, you give them a call and let Craig have the first shot at it. And with that, we're getting up on the hour mark here. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Got a lot of a few emails this past week from listeners. We appreciate that. If you want to donate to the show, please go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. If you got any questions about what we talked about today, a lot of the math that we went over, I'll be glad to answer that via email as well. And with that, David, we'll see if you and I get together on Friday. If not, Alex Cazora will be with me to talk. We'll talk a lot about some of these edge rushers we went over today.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.